Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode and the first live episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, joined by my co-host, Michael.
Sort of joined. Internet joined.
But I think there's a, is it Boogie2988? Every episode of his show, he's like, brought to you by the power of the internet.
Yeah, I mean, it's just factual, right? Yeah,
exactly. Well, let's get right into the show. So thank you to our viewers that we have for joining us on our basically test run episode, you know, tuning it late at night, making sure nobody can see us fail miserably at this for the first time. But we're really excited, and we'll be doing this live every week on YouTube at 8 p.m. Mountain Time on Mondays. That's 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So if you want to watch the show live, you'll be able to do that every week. We want to start.
Yeah, and
go ahead.
Hopefully that's something that at least some of you find valuable, and it's not really any different for us. So
yeah, it should be really fun. It's different not being in the same room, but hopefully we can manage.
It's pretty similar, right? I mean,
it'll be easier with two people, I think.
Yeah, we're forced into looking at each other, so like,
yeah.
You know, it is what it is.
Well, let's start things off by thanking our newest patrons. We're going to give a shout out to Oliver and Sean, being our two newest patrons. Shout out to both of you. It means the world to me every time I see those notifications. I can't express the gratitude that I feel when I see that something that we've done or said or you know, brought value into your life that you wanted to give value back to the cast. So I just want to thank everybody who is donating, and our two newest patrons, Oliver and Sean. Shout out to you guys, and thank you so much.
Yeah, it's really awesome. I mean, it's just cool to know that something you are putting out there is valuable enough that someone thinks it's worth donating to, you know, keep it going. I think that's pretty cool.
Absolutely. It really does mean the world to me. So, you know, during the segment every week, we like to give the patrons a chance to, you know, ask a question. This week, we don't have a patron question because our training grounds is actually a mailbag filled with questions from the patrons. So all of the patrons who ask questions will actually get their questions answered during that training ground segment and during the mailbag part. So, yeah, that's going to be does anyone know what card is on the Planeswalker poster behind Spencer? It's not a card. That is my Pro Tour badge, actually. Let's get right into this. So, this podcast is brought to you by Oasis Games. You can check them out at oasisgamessllc.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. And you can get 4% off of every order by using the code Would That Be Good? No spaces. So they are a great place to buy Magic singles. Yeah, the best. Like, I actually don't buy cards anywhere else.
You can just unequivocally say it's a great space. I mean, what? What does that mean? It's a good place to buy Magic singles. It's just a good place to be.
Oh, okay. That's true. I hung out there for an hour today. So, like, just was there. I didn't do anything other than bug Austin and Michael while I was there. So, but yeah, if you're in the area, I would just hang out there. It is really fun and a really great place. So, #AlwaysImproving. #AlwaysImproving is the point of this podcast. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And so every week on the show, we do this segment that lets us talk about like what we're doing to improve and the things that we can always try and do to get better. So, Michael, what did you do to get better at Magic the Gathering this week?
I kind of sucked it up and played a deck that I thought was a good metagame call, but maybe not the actual best deck. I mean, not even close to being the best deck. And I think it brings me back to like talking about like being a pedestrian and being right versus being dead. Like, it's cool to be right and be like, oh, I think this deck is just actually the best and it's perfect. But like, I'd rather just win.
So what happened?
I don't care at all about the result. So I won a PPTQ, is a pretty small one, but I won playing red black Eldrazi, which is a lot like Mardu, except it has a worse Mardu matchup and better four color Saheeli and Dynavolt Tower matchup. So I certainly don't think it's better than Mardu, but I think that it is different enough than Mardu that it makes it a little bit tougher for everyone else, and you have some slightly better matchups in some places.
So how did you come to find out the things that you just said about the matchups?
I thought it might just actually be like a good deck at some point in time. So I tested it and found out that wasn't really the case. But at the same time, found out that there were things I liked better and worse. I found out where it actually differed from Mardu outside of just being a different choice. And I think that that kind of stuff is valuable in that I tabled it and didn't play it again after I had tested it for a while. But then I was thinking about, you know, what people were playing locally and was like, okay, well, I think this deck will be a good choice for this event, even if I'm not convinced it's a great deck.
Okay, cool. Well, first of all, congratulations. Were you sweating it? Like, because you didn't care about PPTQs and now like you're in a position where you need to get silver again, were you feeling like there might be a chance that you might have messed up by not getting one this season?
Not like really, but I mean, there's still a lot of GPs left, so not super worried about it or anything, but you know, it's one more buffer, right? It's one more chance at it. So
sure.
Nice to have it come pretty easy.
So for me, this week, I noticed that I was getting lazy and I decided to do something about it. Like I went to Wednesday Night Magic at Oasis like I always do, and I didn't adjust a single card on my deck. I didn't even think about it. I actually didn't even know what deck I was playing when I opened my deck box and sat down, and like it was
that's just a good feeling.
Man, no,
it's like Russian roulette.
Yeah, it was not good. It was, especially considering like my goal is to like maintain this actually pretty hard win percentage throughout the entire year of 73% to 75%, and to get to that point, you have to win like a lot of matches, like 73% of them. And having this tournament where you don't care about the tournament and like you're being lazy throughout it. And I was lazy because I didn't like the format. So I was like, why did I even show up kind of thing? And I even offered like all of these insane bounty prizes. And then I just got crushed throughout the tournament because I just didn't care. And it was a bad experience. And it was something that I was like, I can't do this anymore if I'm going to achieve my goal for the year. And the reason I picked the goal that I picked was because I think that 70, like I actually don't even think I can hit my goal. I actually think it's impossible. But when I set the goal, it was to make the other things that I want to happen throughout the next year happen. You know, it was so bad. I felt lazy. So I went home. I started looking at other decks that I could play. I started brewing today, actively looking at spoilers, just getting off the lazy train because I was being bad. So just taking notice of the times where you do things like that and just adjusting is pretty important.
And nice to find motivation in some of the kind of the little things, right? Like it doesn't have to come from some huge, like, shocking revelation or whatever. It's just like, oh man, I felt underprepared for like a win a box. That's, you know, that's probably not a place I want to be.
Yes, exactly. Well, let's go on to our next segment. Every week on the show, we invite one of our listeners who's a patron of $5 or more to, we have a deck doctor segment where we talk about one of the decks that they want us, one of their decks. This week we have one from Oliver, and I'm going to put the deck on the screen if I can. all right, here we go.
Yeah, good luck with that.
All right. I think it's working. Is it working?
I will be able to let you know momentarily. Everything went black. Oh, there we go. Okay, all right. We're good.
Okay.
Except when I talk. Okay, I can't talk.
Yeah, I got it. Well, I'm trying to figure out, do I present to everyone? This is interesting. So I think I can just stop your screen from working, though. Boom. Okay. All right, now talk. All right, cool. No, it worked. We're good. Okay, so sorry for that, everybody. I you know, this is why we did it late at night, and yeah, we'll try and edit that out during the actual podcast. But so we have 4 Snapcaster Mage, 3 Tassager of the Golden Fang, 4 Ancestral Vision, 1 Fatal Push, 3 Lightning Bolt, 4 Serum Vision, 1 Spell Snare, 4 Thought Scour, which won't load, 1 Counter Squall, 2 Mana Leak, 3 Terminate, 3 Colgan's Command, 4 Cryptic Command, 1 Engineered Explosives, 1 Blood Crypt, 2 Creeping Tar Pit, 3 Island, 1 Misty Rainforest, 1 Mountain, 4 Polluted Delta, 4 Scalding Tarn, 2 Steam Vents, 1 Sulfur Falls, 1 Swamp, 2 Watery Grave. The sideboard is 1 Engineered Explosives, 1 Ceremonious Rejection, 1 Dispel, 2 Surgical Extraction, 2 Collective Brutality, 1 Counter Squall, 1 Negate, 1 Anger of the Gods, 3 Fulminator Mage, 1 Vendilion Click, and 1 Damnation. So, things that we love. I like that you've made a decision on the kind of deck you want to be, right? A lot of times with these mid-range decks, people go in many, many, many different directions, and I think that it causes problems.
What one of the things I really like about this deck is just how good it is against Fatal Push. Like, what, it hits your Snapcaster Mage, it hits Creeping Tar Pit, but basically that card just doesn't have text against you, and I think that's a good place to be. I am interested in just the mix of counter magic.
That's one of the things that I like. I think that you've made active decisions when you have lots of one of counter spells, and you can tell that he's being thoughtful about it. You know, knowing that he does want some number of mana leaks, some number of just negate style effects with counter squall, and then even that one of spell snare just tells you that he's made, he's tested and he's making decisions because of it.
And same thing with the Fatal Push Bolt Split, right? I think that kind of goes into the same category. And I like leaning on Bolt a little bit more in the Snapcaster Mage style decks, because this is definitely the kind of deck where I think you need the ability to some extent to just go face. Like, it's a little bit dicey to rely on Tassager and Creeping Tar Pit to get there, right? Sometimes you need to be able to go some kind of like combination of like Kolaghan's Command into Bolt into Snapcaster Mage into Bolt. Kind of thing to close out a game.
I actually think that I would not agree with, I like the split here. One of the things that I would change is actually I would play more Lightning Bolt and maybe another Fatal Push and actually cut down on the number of cryptic commands.
Interesting. So I think that Fatal Push is more competing with Terminate.
I just don't like that many cryptic commands in this Kolaghan's Command deck.
Okay.
But I don't know. Maybe I want 3, but that's a lot of cryptic commands.
Yeah, I am a little ambivalent about playing 4 cryptics and then 3 Kolaghan's commands and 3 terminates. It feels like we're starting to get into the range where, like, with only 4 one drop removal spells, we're making Snapcaster Mage a little bit worse. And my feeling in general is that this is the kind of deck where if Snapcaster Mage isn't great, I don't know why I'm playing it.
Yeah.
I don't know what draws me to this deck specifically if Snapcaster Mage isn't doing a lot of work. So
I think Snapcaster is good. And I think this deck has at least a decent matchup against the... if you build it correctly, you can have a decent matchup against the Death Shadow deck.
I would expect to be fine there. My biggest complaint, perhaps, is just like with the 4 cryptics and 3 Kolaghan's commands. I feel like you weaken your Snapcaster Mages between those and Ancestral Visions and the EE. It's just really, you have a lot of cards that like you can't really flash back very easily with a Snapcaster Mage, at least not in the early terms of the game.
I actually really like Kolaghan's Command Snapcaster Mage in the same deck.
So I like having it in the same deck. I'm talking more about when your mana curve starts creeping up because you're leaning on Terminate over Fatal Push and you're playing the full 4 cryptic 6, and then you're playing Vision, which doesn't flashback with Snapcaster as a 4 of, and you're playing the E, which doesn't flashback with Snapcaster. I worry about, like, Caster not giving you as many options as you might want it to.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Oliver, for giving us a chance to talk about your deck. Those are the changes that I would make in the main deck. Do you have any thoughts on the sideboard before we move on?
I am mostly happy with this. Again, it feels like a lot of it is just personal preference when it comes to like the exact mix of spells that you want. I like having access to engineered explosives. It's not great with Snapcaster Mage, but I think that card is really well positioned right now. I like having access to an additional copy in post-board games. The whole Fulminator Surgical thing is very good. Surgical is a lot better index with Snapcaster Mage than without, because that's, I mean, obviously sort of absurdly mana efficient.
Yes.
And then it's just a question on what mix of other spells you want, right? Like,
yeah,
how many Ceremonious Rejection versus Dispel versus Negate versus Counter Squall.
That's actually the card that I was going to point out, is how many Ceremonious Rejections do you want in this kind of deck? I think that's an important thing that you have to ask yourself, because, I mean, there's a real cost of playing Ceremonious Rejection over other spells you could play in that slot.
Yeah, it's interesting. I can't help but wonder, so I imagine that's good against Bant Eldrazi hypothetically and Tron, but I don't think Bant Eldrazi is actually a salvageable matchup. I don't think there's any way you can make that matchup good. I think you're just going to be a huge dog in that matchup no matter what you do. And against Tron, I can't help but think the Counter Squall or Negate is probably just better.
Yeah. I also wonder, like, I didn't think of the Eldrazi matchup when I thought of that. I wonder if that's you can't scratch your neck, by the way, on stream, because when you're talking, people can see it. That's interesting.
I mean, you know, just wait for me to talk and then get that in there real quick.
Scratch my neck. Mute myself, quickly scratch my neck. That's great. That's funny. All right. Yeah, thank you so much, Oliver. I lost my train of thought there. But thank you so much for submitting the deck. We really appreciate it. If you are a patron of $5 or more per month, you also can submit a deck for a deck doctor. So thank you so much. Let's move on to our power ranking. So every week on the show, we're going to talk about... We're going to give you the power rankings. We're going to tell you what's doing well in Magic in the last week. This week, we are doing Legacy twice in a row for the first time in a long time, because we had our first Legacy event for the first time in a long time. And we want to talk about what happened there, what did well, and what we think. Very short power rankings. We've already announced that the power rankings are going to, we're just going to give you the data, give you quick thoughts on each of those decks, and then move on to actually talking about a deck of the week and going in depth on that. So, all tied with 4 points, we have Blue-Black Reanimator, Mono-Red Sneak Attack, Eldrazi, and Leovold Control. Which one of these decks, or which of these decks, do you think has a real place in this metagame?
I really like the Leovold decks. That card is like kind of single-handedly warping the format a little bit. It is just really powerful.
Yeah, All of its points came from top 32s. It didn't have anything in the top 16 or the top 8.
I also think it's perhaps the hardest deck to build correctly. Like, when you're calling Leovold Control an archetype, it's like, it has the most unexplored space out of probably any of these decks. So
that's true.
I don't necessarily expect it to instantly be dominant, but I think that if you're looking at, like, where I would invest my time and energy if I didn't, you know, none of these other decks jumped out to me, it would definitely be a Leovold deck.
It's entirely possible that it is the reason that Mono Red Sneak Attack top 8 of the tournament.
Sure. I mean, it's so hard to say. Like, Leovold is a really powerful card, and more, even if it's not the best deck, it definitely warps what is the best deck because of how oppressive it is against the things that are bad against it.
Yeah. Coming in with 5 points each, we have two decks that got a top 8 and two top 32s. We have Elves and Infect. What do you think of these decks right now?
I think that both of these decks are the kind of decks where, like, if this is just what you do, if you play Elves or you play Infect, they're fine. Like, they will likely be fine as long as you want to play them. I don't think either of them is, like, especially well positioned, but I think both of these decks reward player ability a lot. and are less like metagame positioning decks.
I've always said that I've thought the Elves is like one of the best decks in Legacy, but one of the hardest decks to play. That has never changed in my mind. I think it's more well positioned now than it typically has been for the last little while. But the deck is like hard to play and really, really good.
Well, the biggest thing that I would say with Elves is like, so there are some decks where they're maybe hard to play perfectly, but the fall off isn't that big. I would say with Elves, like
when you're hoping insanely. People?
Well, sure, whatever, right? Like, or if you're going to cast Show and Tell and put in Omniscience or whatever you're doing, right? Like, there are some things where sort of your basement level play is just still 90-something percent. Like, sure. As long as you're not an idiot, you're going to get most of it. Elves is just like, every decision needs to be basically perfect.
Yeah, we did a testing video where I played Elves against Matt, and I've played a lot of Elves, but I'm not a good Elves player. Like, it is there are so many things going on, and like so many minute decisions that could completely change the amount of mana that you have, that like just change everything, and it makes the deck really hard to play.
Yeah, so. I mean, anytime you're like playing a testing video and you start realizing about halfway through that like, you're just not even close to good enough for this to be of any value to anyone. It's not a good feeling. And I mean, there's a reason that I would not try to play Elves if we were testing Legacy.
Grixis Delver comes in next with 7 points. This is actually the deck that we're going to be talking about during our deck of the week. So we're going to move on to Miracles, which came in with 15 points. And I just want to say, haha, Matt Klang, I told you so, and say that Leavel did not keep this deck from being the best deck.
Well, I also think it's like, it's the deck that most of the best players gravitate to. It's a deck that people own already. It's a deck where, you know, your innovation space is like, how many predicts do I play and how many mentors do I play, right? Like,
the
deck is challenging, but it's a lot. Formats like this tend to be slow to shift, and there's a lot to be said for just like, so if you can, you know, work on some Leavel deck and maybe find something good, or you can play a deck if you're good with Miracles that's like clearly plenty good. It just doesn't make sense from like an individual tournament EV standpoint to spend a bunch of time messing around with something else.
Yeah, and I think that's true of Legacy a lot of the time, right? Is that the card pool's so vast, things like that, and that the deck diversity is actually pretty high, and the way that the different types of decks attack you, right? One combo deck is not going to attack you the exact same way as another combo deck, so because of that, you have to attack lots of different facets in Legacy. So what you said is true, where it's like, am I actually going to get that much value from trying to break this format?
Well, it's so unlikely, right? It's so unlikely that you actually like find a deck that's so oppressive that it's like better than being a good Miracles player. That's a really high standard, right? If there's a deck that's just like strictly better than being a good Miracles player, oh man.
Yeah.
That's like you did it.
Yeah. Right? You're going to do well at that tournament, exactly.
Yeah. So. No, I mean you're going to win that tournament and then go on to fair.
Well, let's move on to our deck of the week segment. So every week on the show, starting this week, we talk about one of the decks in the power rankings and go in depth on it. So we're going to start this week with Grixis Delver. This deck took second place. I'm just going to pull up the list from Nate Barton and just read it off really quick. So we have 4 Deathrite Shaman, 4 Delver of Secrets, 4 Gurmag Angler, 1 True Name Nemesis, 3 Young Pyromancer, 4 Brainstorm, 4 Daze, 1 Dismember, 4 Force of Will, 4 Lightning Bolt, 1 Spell Pierce, 2 Cabal Therapy, 4 Gataxian Probe, 4 Ponder, 2 Flooded Strand, 2 Misty Rainforest, 2 Polluted Delta, 2 Scalding Tarn, that's funny, 1 Tropical Island, 2 Underground Sea, 3 Volcanic Island, and 4 Wasteland. The sideboard is 1 Null Rod, 1 Pithy Needle, 1 Winter Orb, 2 Baleful Strix, 1 True Name Nemesis, 1 Dread of Night, 1 Sulfuric Vortex, 1 Ancient Grudge, 1 Fatal Push, 1 Flusterstorm, 1 Pyroblast, 2 Surgical Extraction, and 1 Cabal Therapy.
So there's actually only 2 Gurmag Anglers.
Did I say 3?
4, yeah.
Oh, well, thank you for correcting me.
So just 2. But yeah, this deck is a little bit closer to sort of the more traditional versions. Like, than we'd seen online recently. People had leaned away a little bit from kind of a Young Pyromancer probe therapy package.
Yeah. What do you think the key cards are in this archetype right now?
I mean, all the Delver decks, you're trying to sort of like Delver Days, Wasteland, do that whole thing. But this one has sort of the secondary plan, especially in sideboarded games, of just like Pyromancer Probe therapy against the decks where it's harder to play the Mana Denial kind of strategy. It's very rare that neither the Mana Denial nor the discard strategy is good.
Yeah, I think that also when you're looking at this, the deck is very much trying to be. I think it's a Deathrite Shaman deck, and it's just called Delver right now.
No, that's true of every Delver deck. Deathrite Shaman is way better than Delver Secrets. That's just not even close.
Yeah, and I think that's really where you're like when you're talking about Mana Denial. That card's just like strategy denial, right? It's just trying to change the game around it and saying like, no, you don't get to do what you're going to do. We're going to do what I'm going to do.
Well, but really, I mean, what it also does is it like makes your dazes a lot stronger, right? Like being able to bounce a land when you have a mana dork, it makes your wasteland stronger because it gives you like two lands in the graveyard. It all feeds into
what you said though, right? But it's shaping it, or like when the games where you have it are just shape it around it rather than just,
but
you know,
it's very much like Delver in a lot of ways, right? Like they're both kind of similar. I mean, a Delver is like a poor man's Deathrite Shaman, but they're both cards that, you know, work very well with the resource denial cards you have to make your opponent unable to execute their game plan.
Mason says, is Deathrite Shaman the best creature in Legacy? I would say that Deathrite Shaman is undeniably the best creature in Magic.
Yeah, it's probably. I don't know what else I would even put in that tier.
Yeah. It is just... It changes the whole game around it. The other thing that I would say, you kind of mentioned some of the other key cards, but you know, depending on the version that you're playing, you might be attacking from different ways, right? You might be a Young Pyromancer, Cabal Therapy, Cataxian Probe deck, or some of the newer versions have kind of gone away from that, maybe playing like a couple of Snapcaster Mages, just doing a couple of different things. Or sure, being thicker in the Gurmag Angler.
Yes, nice. People play like only 12 creatures and it's 4 Gurmag Anglers with your other ones.
I think most people
like
have
out of favor of lately.
Most people have, I think, have moved away from that. I think there's usually like 1 to 2 True Name right now.
And then there's always the whole stifle thing that, like, generally if you're not playing the probe therapies in the main, you're playing stifle.
Yeah.
Those are sort of the deck building decision points.
What do you think this deck's good matchups are depending on how you build it?
Almost no matter how you build it, Storm is great. I don't know that is like a big selling point right now, because that's not really a deck you're seeing a ton of. All the Delver decks, I would say this deck doesn't have a great Miracles matchup. It's like you're not just like cold to it. I mean, obviously your good draws are good against just about anything. I mean, what you really want is to win the die roll and play a one drop.
Yes, you do.
Those are your good matchups, right?
I think you're actually good against most combo variants. It doesn't just have to be Storm. You know, you can build your deck to be most combo decks. And you have so many things that you're doing that interact with them while also advancing your game plan, whether that's Young Pyromancer, whether that's Delver Secret, whether that's Deathrite Shaman. It doesn't really matter because all of it's putting them on, you know, weird pressures that they have to deal with, right?
And the Mana Denial tends to be good against the combo decks.
Exactly.
Like both the Mana Denial and the Cabal Therapy, where a lot of decks, only half of it is really very good.
Yeah. What are your terrible matchups or your really bad ones?
I have played a fair amount of this, and I wouldn't say there's sort of a cap on how bad a matchup can be with this style of deck. Like, I mean, I guess something like Punishing Fire or Chalice of the Void is not what you want to play against.
Oh, yeah, that matchup. Punishing Abzan is like unwinnable.
Yeah, I mean that's obviously bad.
But that deck was actually built to beat you, right? That's not right. Kind of like that right. Deck is literally like I'm going to build my deck. I'm going to just crush Delver.
Right. I mean, I'm just listing cards at this point. Like, yes, if we just list the cards that are good against you and jam them all in a deck, like, that matchup probably isn't going to be great. Miracles is, like, not very good. Lacking Abrupt Decay, Counterbalance is pretty good against you. Terminus can be good against you. And your Mana Denial is relatively weak against them, relative to a lot of the other decks. They play a ton of basics. They can play around Daze pretty well. You can't Cabal Therapy the Terminus off the top of their deck.
And they Blood Moon you a lot of the time.
Yeah, I mean, you're playing actual zero basics with no way to, like, you can't even float mana to Abrupt Decay it. So
would you play this deck today?
I don't know that it would be my first choice in Legacy, but I certainly think that this is the kind of deck that you get a lot of mileage out of being just very good with. I think this is the kind of deck that rewards familiarity both with the format and just, like, with the list you're playing.
Yeah,
I mean, that's true of Legacy in general, but, like, you have a lot of cantrips, you know, using your Cabal Therapies effectively, just managing your resources and sort of doing the Delver dance of, you know, how do I play my Dazes and Wastelands? And that kind of stuff is not easy, but if you are really good with it, it's certainly powerful.
I think you could easily put Abrupt Decay in this deck, by the way. Like, I just don't think it would be that hard.
No, people do all the time, and sometimes then we'll go a little bit bigger. Let me find the lists that people are doing that with. But that's like a pretty common thing, or at least was for a time. But Abrupt Decay is an actual...
You know what? I actually think I did a testing video with this deck with Abrupt Decay in it, and I was like, oh, this is the worst card in my deck by a lot. So maybe I'm wrong.
Well, it can be bad sometimes. It's a lot less lean than the rest of the deck. Usually you then don't play Young Pyromancers, don't play Cabal Therapies, and don't play Gitaxian Probes. And then you put, like, more True Names instead. It just sort of changes what you're trying to do. It generally means you also can sideboard into a little more of a true control deck. Like, usually people are playing, like, at least one Jace and some, like, Painful Truths, Kolaghan's Command type stuff in the board of those decks. And sometimes, like, one more land.
Yeah.
It's just a slightly different deck.
Also, we skipped something that we have to go back for. I'm so sorry.
What did we skip?
We skipped Card of the Week. So, every week we can on the show, we want to give out some Magic cards. This week, we want to give out Terminus. So every week, if you're a patron of $3 or more, you're eligible to win this prize. And we just select somebody randomly out of that group of people. And this week, we're going to give away Terminus to Oliver Gibson. So Terminus was picked as the card of the week because people are changing their tune. They don't want Counterbalance to be banned anymore. They want Terminus to be banned.
Do they?
Yeah. They're saying it's the reason the deck's too good. I actually wonder if that's true. So here's the thing. Is the deck was a good deck that people played before Terminus was printed, but it wasn't what it is without Terminus. So I wonder if that's okay. Maybe that solves the problem.
It probably would. I mean, it really limits... It makes just, like, getting under the Counterbalance a much more real thing, right? Like, these for, like, Goyf and stuff like that, right? Because you needed to actually, like, not die. But Terminus is sort of, you know, it's not a shocker to me that, you know, Instant Speed, One Mana, Wrath of God is, like...
Dude, was it last week on the podcast where I was, like, talking about it being an instant?
I don't remember.
And you were like, that's a sorcery, and I was like, oh... Good talk. I don't know it's ever been cast against me as a sorcery.
Yeah, no, exactly. So it's like technically a sorcery. It just, you know, that's the mode that isn't a real mode.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's move on to let's move on to so first of all, Oliver, just shoot me a message. I'll put it in my thing. Apparently I owe wristbands still, but I actually don't have any wristbands. My house got cleaned and the cleaner threw them away. So I actually have to order new ones. So if you We'll start with Mason and go backwards. Everybody, even if you have one already, everyone from Mason, when Mason signed up back, we will we'll shoot you some wristbands. That's one of the things that you get for being a patron. So, but Oliver, thank you so much for being a patron, and we'll shoot you over some Terminus. Let's move on to our training round. So every week on the show, we want to talk about something to help you get better at Magic or life in general. And this week, we invited patrons of the show to submit lots of questions, and we are going to answer them.
So, sorry, one more question about the Terminus. Do you think we can just send him all the Terminus in the world to effectively ban miracles?
So they're only $1.46 right now, but there's a lot of them now.
Okay. Well, that was a good idea, but, you know, it might be tougher than I think.
Yeah, but that's probably like, I don't know, like $60,000?
Might be worth it.
All right.
Think about it.
Let me just pull out $60,000.
That might get our patron page really rolling. If we were just like going to set up a GoFundMe to effectively ban Terminus, you might be shocked at the amount of money that would.
Yeah, we can make it a patron goal at $80,000. We will buy every Terminus, every single one.
And burn them on a Google Hangout, just like the Seance guy.
Yeah, there we go. There we go.
I mean, if you don't like that, then
yeah. All right, let's move on to our mailbag episode. So this week we're going to answer questions sent in by the patrons. Let's start with the first one. We have a question from Adrian. It says, can you describe the efficient ways of staying hydrated at tourneys? Also, can you go into good mental prep for a magic weekend, like sleeping habits, eating habits later that night, etc.? Yeah, do you want to go first?
Sure. So assuming we're talking about like a Grand Prix, the main thing I do is just, I mean, I'm also diabetic, so like this is just kind of my life in general, but like try to sort of eat and hydrate on a schedule rather than when you feel hungry or thirsty. Cause I don't know about you guys, but I get so sort of lost in what I'm doing sometimes that I just forget. I just like forget to be a functional human being.
After
every other round, I'll like eat a granola bar and try to drink a bottle of water or something. Like, and I think just like making sure to continue to eat and continue to like drink liquid, that kind of stuff. Or like every other round, taking a break and stepping outside just for like a little kind of mental break. I think that kind of stuff can really help you, especially in longer events. Because I know a lot of people, like, the most magic they play is, like, weekly win-a-box type stuff. And I think people hit this wall if they're struggling to win PBTQs as well. Where, like, just having to play, like, 7, 8, 9 rounds of that you're trying to win in a single day gets really rough by the end. And I think just getting in the habit of, like, doing the same things every couple of rounds, especially when you know you have a long day ahead of you, will help you play better as the day goes on.
Yeah, for me, I actually don't ever not have a bottle of water in front of me. I make it a point to always refill my water after every round so that I can just drink while I'm thinking or while my opponent's thinking, and it really helps me, actually. It makes it so I'm hydrated all day long. I never have the problem of being thirsty. You have to pee more, but, you know, whatever, who cares?
That just gets you extra breaks when you call a judge and ask for a restroom break.
Dude, I call a judge and ask for a restroom break probably every GP. It's probably inappropriate.
It's the advantage of playing different opponents every round, right? They can't remember you as the guy that keeps taking restroom breaks.
I didn't do it every round. I do it every tournament.
Okay, all right.
As far as mental prep and food, I try and eat really well at GPs, actually. I actually use GPs as an excuse to become a foodie and really test what's out there at the event that I'm going to. Same thing with SEGs. Especially one of the things I don't like about PPTQs is typically, like, once you're in top 8, like, you have to go get food, right? I got to go get food, and it's usually something that's not very good for you. And at GPs, I just don't usually experience that. So for example, if I'm presented with the option of a hot dog, chicken fingers, buffalo wings, and like just a sandwich, I'm going to pick the sandwich over those things at a GP for like my lunch. Because I don't want to be greased up like during my rounds. But it kind of depends on what your body can handle and what you function at the best, right? I just greased up the wrong term there.
Yeah, I mean, if that doesn't make you laugh, I don't know. I don't think your opponents want that either.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just uncomfortable. Don't grease people up while you're playing.
Slide off the chair. It's just terrible.
Just be prepared, right? I think just like bringing stuff with you, you have 100% control over what you're going to have available to eat. I felt very vindicated when you know, the player I know who's closest to, you know, like a real pro level, that being Donald Smith, literally has like 30 Clif bars in his backpack at all times. Like, he has enough Clif bars that whenever I see him at a GP, he will try to hand me Clif bars. And I think once gave me and Danny like a combined 12 Clif bars. It was impressive.
I invited him to be on the show last week, but he was in Mexico, so he couldn't. Or this week. He couldn't because he was in Mexico. Anyway.
Hopefully, sometime soon. He's a funny guy.
Yeah. Francis says, was there a specific moment or moments where things just clicked and you became a better Magic player? If so, what were those enlightening moments? And if not, was it just a slow and steady progression or something else?
It's an interesting one. I would say, like, there were maybe moments where I understood what someone had said to me before. And I think that happens a lot, like just in life in general. Like, there'll be phrases and you'll be like, oh, I don't really understand that phrase. And then one day you're just like, oh, wow, there's a reason everyone always says that, because, you know, they're not just making it up. It's like people actually, you know, these phrases are generally true. And I wouldn't say that, like, there's a moment where just you're going to be like, oh, well, I sucked yesterday and I'm great now. So, you know, oh, it happened for me. But I think in smaller aspects, you can sort of, I would say it's often like you don't notice progress until something sort of nudges you to like think about how much better you are now than you were before.
I actually have had moments on the podcast where I didn't have a level up moment, but I had others help me get them. I can think of three specific examples where I became a better Magic player because things happened. The first one is going to be with Cobblade. So I remember the first time where I realized that I could play a Squadron Hawk, brainstorm with my Jace, put Squadron Hawks back on top of my deck, get different cards and crack a fetch land and then play a different Squadron Hawk, get the Squadron Hawks back. And that was a level up moment where it was like, my win percentage just shot up from that kind of realization. And what you'll see is when you're playing Magic, you'll find plays where you can, you know, where they might be analogs for other plays that you can make later on in your career, but it won't always feel like a level up moment. It will feel like, oh, I can do that. And that's it. The next thing that I can think of, I've told the story on the podcast a couple of times, which was I was with Alex Sittner at an MTG Open, and we had drawn round one, and I think we had both won our next two or three or something. And I said, oh, so only so many left. And he was like, actually, no, there's three more in addition to that, because I'm not here to top 8. I'm here to win. And that changed my perspective on like how I'm approaching a tournament. Michael's talked about this a lot, where people don't realize that they're going to play 14 rounds plus top 8 of Magic at a GP, or 15 rounds plus top 8 of a Magic at a GP. And that's just a lot of rounds of Magic. That's a lot of hours played. And you have to be prepared for all of that, right? When you go to a PPDQ, it's not 6 hours, it's 9 hours or 8 hours. You know, it's just a completely different time frame.
I think that's really true. And I think a lot of getting better is just like very slow incremental improvements. But sometimes it takes a realization like that for you to sort of recognize, like, you can make those improvements incrementally, right? You don't have to, like, you can become a better player slowly and over time, but a lot of the time, a lot of the things you get better at pretty smoothly. Like, I think mulliganing decisions is not the kind of thing where you're gonna, like, read something and suddenly you're now great at mulliganing. Like, it's just something that's going to come naturally from playing a lot and working at it. But eventually you will play like a game where you're like, oh man, 6 months ago, I would have kept that hand and I would have lost. And because I mulliganed, I had a chance to win. Like, I think it's more complex than like, very few of the ways you actually get better at the gameplay aspects of Magic. I think you can learn things or think about how you're processing information in a new way. And that might be kind of an instantaneous thing. But in terms of like actually improving your Magic skills, it's very much just like grinding away at it for the most part.
Yeah, I don't remember what the third one that I was going to say was. But the one thing that I will say is that, you know, there's going to be times where you're going to plateau, where you're not going to be getting better. And when you're in those times, I always say it's time to rinse and repeat. Like, you have to just start over. Say like, all right, well, I'm not getting better right now. So like, let's look at how I'm playing, how I'm sequencing my lands. Let's look how like how I'm doing this, that I think I'm doing really well. Just try and find mistakes that you're making. Because I hate to bring it to you, if you're not finding mistakes you're making, you're either the best player ever, or you're just, I mean, that's, or you're just wrong, which you are, because you're not the best player ever unless you're John Finkel or Paulo Vitor. So unless you're one of those two people, like, it's time to,
time to keep working on it. Well, on the flip side, I would also say just to be careful not to get super frustrated with like results, especially in a shorter window of time, just because there's enough variance in the game that like, on a, you know, even a multi-tournament time frame, things can just go poorly for you for reasons largely out of your control, or things can go worse for you than they were before without it necessarily being that you're playing worse.
Yeah, I would also say that I was significantly worse at Magic when I qualified for my first Pro Tour than when I top-aided like my third old school PTQ. Like, I definitely was not as good at Magic. I knew my deck really well, and that's why I did well at that tournament, but I was not as good at Magic. So, you know, looking at results in like a microcosm, I don't know what the word I'm looking for is.
Just on like micro versus macro scale, right? Like, if you're looking at a single event, it just doesn't necessarily mean that much outside of you played well enough.
Yeah. So yeah. Also, Francis, I do have a video series that's specifically like 9 or 10 parts about just steps you can take to get better at Magic the Gathering. And I would recommend checking that out. If you're here watching right now, you can just look, it's in a playlist on the YouTube channel, but I would highly recommend it. I spent a lot of time writing those short episodes, and they're really short, you know, just, you can watch them whenever. Mason asks, Magic question. What is one bad habit you wish you could get rid of, and how are you going to work to get rid of that habit? I wish, I was not prepared for this question, even though it's in the show notes. do you have one?
I can go first. This specifically relates to Limited, but I lost a match in a draft at a GP where I could have made a pretty unintuitive play that would have played around a single card that I had seen in a pack, and I think would have won me the game I was playing, and because of that, the match. And it made me think that, like, especially in Limited, it just made me realize that I needed to develop my Limited skill set a little bit more still. And, like, it was just interesting because it sort of came back to this whole, like, being right versus winning thing. And it just sort of reinforced for me how much it's easy to fall into, like, the making excuses for making or not making a play that you thought was, like, a higher percentage play at the time, but worked out poorly. Just sort of like I'd like to be able in those situations to really think about whether or not I should have, like, whether or not that was enough of a possibility based on the way the game had played out and the way the draft had played out to that point to make a weird play that might be better.
Yeah.
That's kind of a long-winded answer, but I think sometimes it's easy to fall into, like, just thinking conventionally, and by conventional wisdom, I don't think it would have been a good play. But looking back at how that game played out, it seemed fairly likely that, you know, the card I got beat by was the card he had. And I knew that it was a card he could have in his deck.
Yeah. I know a bad habit I want to get rid of. And I actually want to thank Mason for this question, for making me think this hard about it. I actually have two. I'm going to give you two. The first one is I don't ever double check my deck list when I submit it for an event. And I get a lot of game losses for doing that. So I will never again not double check my deck list. So thank you for that, Mason. The second thing that I'm never going to do again is I have a terrible, terrible habit of keeping bad hands in game two when I'm up a game. And I always tell people, don't do that. That's not how you're supposed to mulligan. And I catch myself doing it all the time. And I am never going to do it again. Mulligan every hand as though it's like the same way, because you're going to win more matches that way. And I catch myself doing that wrong all the time too. And it's the same advice I give people not to do. And I'm never going to do that again. I actually really, really appreciate you making me think about that, Mason. So thank you.
That's interesting, because I think a lot of people, it sort of falls the opposite way, right? Like, not in game two, but in game three, I think a lot of people get gun shy. And I can sort of see that, like, maybe just trying to evaluate things completely critically. So it sort of ties into like what I was saying too, right? Where it's like, I'm going to make a play that emotionally, like, it feels wrong, it feels bad, right? Because you, like, you want to keep this hand in game two, or you don't want to play around this card because it's weird. But sometimes if you're like really trying to just take sort of the, how do I feel about this out of it?
Yeah.
I think that can be an interesting way to try to get better, and a difficult way to try to get better.
Yes. Now, fun question. What is your favorite, what is one of your favorite TV shows, and why is it The Bachelor? Michael?
It is one of my favorite TV shows. I just finished watching season whatever of Archer on Netflix, whatever the most recent one. Oh my God, I love Archer. I don't know why. I just love it.
My favorite TV show is Silicon Valley, and it's not particularly close. So, Alan,
so it's not The Bachelor. So you're calling Mason a liar.
He's wrong. I don't know that he's a liar. Alan says, I know you kind of covered this on a recent episode, but what are your tips for using Modo to improve as a player and to get out of the most out of your games online? For someone who doesn't have a playtest group, do you have any tips or advice of choosing a deck early in a format, post PT, but before game day and the first GP? What would you look at to make sure that you're buying into a deck that lasts through the season? Blue White Flash, PT Kaladesh, and not just a deck that did well for the PT meta in Solo Artifact for PT Origins. Oh man, that's a hard question.
Okay, so let's break this into two parts. So
sure.
How would you use Magic Online to improve as a player and get the most out of your games online? Okay, so basically just treat them seriously, but also look at them each as learning opportunities, right? So, like, don't just play to play, because if you're not really in a mindset to get something out of it, you're probably not going to get anything out of it. But Magic Online has some really interesting tools, like the ability to replay games, so you can go back and watch what you were doing, like kind of where things went south or where they went well for you in a game. And that's pretty cool, I think. Because sometimes you'll play a game where, like, you felt good about it for the most part, but you made a decision that you weren't sure about, and sometimes with the benefit of hindsight, you can go back and actually look at this and say, okay, was this decision wrong, or did I just get punished for, you know, making a play that was just as good as the other one?
Yeah, one of the things that Quentin Pierce used to do, I don't know, he might still do this, is he actually took notes after matches, just about kind of what happened, or like he wrote down key decision points he made and what he had in his hand and stuff like that. that actually is probably easier to go back and do after matches now, because you're in league style play. So that may be something that you can do.
Yeah, it depends on kind of what works for you, right? Like, I think the main thing that Magic Online lets you do is it lets you get in a high volume of matches at a pretty competitive level. Whereas, like, if you're going to play, let's say, a weekly event, an FNM, and then a PvdQ every other weekend, so you're playing like 2.5 events a week, and only one of them is especially serious, you just don't get that many really competitive matches. And I mean, I think it's pretty easy to see, like, that kind of benefit. Just volume is really, really valuable when you're looking for practice, essentially. Yeah. But Magic Online specifically does afford you a few things that you can't really do in paper.
All right. So for your second question, you know, this is hard, man. Like, there've been a lot of times where I've just bought a deck because I thought it was super sweet, you know, and that fit my playstyle, and it didn't turn out to being that good. It is hard because, you know, when it, like, for example, when you look at, like, Grixis Control winning the Pro Tour, sometimes you just got to listen to the person and what they say. So right after that tournament, like, he just was like, the deck's bad, don't play it. And so, like, you've got to say, all right, he said the deck's bad, I'm not going to buy it. And the same thing is true of the guy that won with Black White. The Pro Tour with Black White. He's like, this deck is unplayable. So when he says that, don't go buy the deck. Right. And oftentimes, if the deck is bad and they don't think it's well positioned, or if they tell you they built it specifically for the tournament, listen to them, because they're going to say stuff like that.
If you want to look at one more thing, the only other thing I would say is, like, look at the availability of hate cards in a format. So if your strategy is really reliant on casting in Soul Artifact, and there's a bunch of, like, I think it was Unravel the Aether or whatever, but no one was playing these cards because no one expected these strategies. Just, like, if there are really obvious hate cards for the deck, that it doesn't necessarily make it, like, not a viable choice, but it's maybe a strike against it.
He also says, do either of you get anxious or nervous before or during serious important events like GPs, RPTQs, or at the PT? Okay, so real talk. I'm going to tell a story about Michael. Like, when I met Michael, we were playing against each other, and he was shaking. He was shaking like crazy. And it was intense, but he has gotten a lot better. And I watched him play flawlessly for qualifying for the Pro Tour, for the last Pro Tour he qualified for. So I've watched Michael take huge steps in this, and he's way better at it than I am now. So if you want an answer to this question, how to deal with it, I would talk to this guy.
So my perspective is probably a little bit different, because I, like, you know, actually struggle with anxiety as a part of, like, my life, not just my Magic life at times. But I think the main thing you can do is just try to make yourself feel comfortable. And the best ways to do that, really, I mean, the number one way really is repetition. Like, your first GP is scarier than your second GP is scarier than your 32nd GP, right? Like, just like everything, the first time you do something, it's harder and just more traumatic, more anxiety inducing. But what I would do too is sometimes really trying to lose yourself in the game and, like, focusing on mechanically, like, okay, so what could he have? What does his play pattern indicate? Trying to really lose yourself in, like, not what am I playing for, but how do I navigate this turn? What does his sequencing indicate? Trying to really just get focused on some of the nitty gritty stuff in the match can help with just taking your mind off of, like, things you don't have direct control over, like, oh, I really hope I win this match because, you know, whatever. Yeah. And just put your focus on the things that help you get there.
Yeah, you know, I've all of the times where I've had, like, serious anxiety during a match, I no one's told me I can't do this, so I'm just gonna keep saying that I do it. I usually call a judge and, like, if you're going to have an anxiety attack at the table, like, you should probably leave the table. So I usually call a judge and go wash my face. Like, I,
Yeah, I think that like that's a good solution if it's like this is going to immediately be a problem.
Yeah.
My thought is like if I'm looking at this on a longer term basis. I mean, obviously if I'm feeling panicky or whatever, like
right.
that kind of sucks, but I don't know that it's always like a fixable problem, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there isn't always like a cut and dry, well, I was anxious and then I did this, so now we're good.
As far as I don't really so like I suffer from a disorder that anxiety is a side effect of. So usually when I'm anxious during magic, I'm like thinking about my wife at home or something. So I don't know. I don't magic is like an escape for me. So I don't really go through this. So I don't have a good answer for this. Next up, I have a few questions. One, what is your favorite magic content creator or creators, not counting yourself or each other?
Oh man, you think I have so much. This question just sounds like I like myself so much more than I do. I like that the thought is that the answer would be myself. That's great.
Yeah, I like the thought. You thought that I would say Michael.
I mean.
No, I'm just kidding. I love you, Michael. I have very specific ones. My favorite magic podcasts are Spike Feed and probably LR. My favorite magic writer is Paulo Vitor Dama de Rosa, and that's just because he's actually the best magic writer. I think those are my favorite content creators, without a doubt. What about you?
I don't really listen to a lot of magic content. I will watch like Twitch streams sometimes, but I don't usually like. I mostly just want to watch people play Magic and talk about the plays they're making. And I find that, you know, when you get like 800 people in a Twitch chat or whatever, it kind of detracts from that.
Yeah.
So I don't watch a lot of like people who are like I wouldn't watch like Newmont or someone like that. That just isn't what I want out of content. My favorite Magic writer is probably Jerry Thompson. He's the only person I really read consistently, but that's mostly just because I like his writing. I don't know that it is like a lot more than that. I just enjoy reading what he writes.
We are a quarter of the way. Oh, sorry.
Good. I mean, he's good enough, certainly good enough that he's worth listening to.
Awesome. We are a quarter of the way through 2017. How are your goals so far for 2017 going? I make 72.97% on my win percentage.
So failing.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm at 19 points, so failing.
You're doing okay, man. You got a long time.
No, it's true. It's funny to talk about that as a 2017 goal, given that, you know, it feels so much more compressed than that. But yeah, I'm fairly happy with progress thus far. I have to imagine Spencer's as well.
Yeah, it feels good. Like, I don't actually think I'll hit my goal. So that's a little different, but. Other than that, yeah. Let's see here. There are a lot of hype cards like Gideon in the new set. What is your favorite spoiled card so far?
Drakehaven is the only correct answer.
Drakehaven. Honestly, the card that like I'm the most hyped on, Cartouche of Zeal is obviously, you know, just great, and everybody should be super, super excited about that one. But honestly, like the card that I saw and I was like, oh man, this card's good is Channeler Initiate. That card is good. I'm excited. That's my kind of magic card. I like mid-range games, man.
So I'm pretty sure that Drakehaven is like just actually going to be great, and it's going to be a card that people actively hate. So, you know.
Yeah.
Get ready.
The other card that I really like is Cut Ribbon. That card's really good.
That card seems, I have no idea, that card like is a lot more deck dependent in terms of constructed playability. That card's going to be so good in limited. Oh my god, that card's going to be so good in limited.
Yeah, the card's sweet. Would you still play Magic if it was a digital only product? So that's a great question. Are we talking about current Magic Online? Or are we talking about like, you know, like a good digital version of the game? Because yes, I would.
I would, even if it was just Magic Online, as long as there were,
as long as there was a Pro Tour.
Yeah, I mean, as long as it didn't, you know, mean I couldn't play events that I was interested in.
Yeah, I feel the same. As long as there was still a Pro Tour that I could try and qualify for, I would probably still play.
I don't even think it would detract that much.
Yeah. If you could put any one card in Amonkhet that is not the Power 9, what would it be and why? It's Lotus Cobra. It's not close. Lotus Cobra, Lotus Cobra, Lotus Cobra, Lotus Cobra.
We don't have fetch lands.
I don't care. Let's see. What would I put in the set? I would put Lightning Bolt in the set.
So you'd have Shock and Lightning Bolt?
I don't care. I think Lightning Bolt, like, should just... I mean, So, like, here's the thing. It's, like, I think this set should have had, like, Lightning Bolt Miscalculation. Like, I think that, like, I don't get it. It's not an exciting answer, though. I would put... I mean, they let me... put
Mental Misstep to counter your Lightning Bolt. No, but seriously, what card would you really want? What card would make you single-handedly excited?
I don't know. Like, Cultivate? Farseek would excite me. That card would be real good right now. Yeah, I would put Farseek in the set. So,
interesting.
What card would you put in the set?
It's such a hard question. I don't know why it's a hard question.
So many magic cards.
Exactly. There are a lot of them. And, you know, I could play any of them. I would put Eldrazi Temple in this set.
Okay. That seems, like, terrible. All right. The most important question. If you had to erase a Starburst flavor from existence, what color would you pick and why would it be red? I wouldn't pick red, Mason. I would pick plum, because why is there a plum flavored Starburst?
No. It has to be an original. This is a cop out answer.
Oh, it has to be an original? It's obviously lemon.
Yeah. No, it's pink. You know why? Because pink isn't even a real flavor. It's just pink flavor.
It's strawberry, right?
Yeah, but it doesn't taste like strawberry. Well,
the red one doesn't taste like cherries. The only one that tastes close to what it tastes like is the orange one.
Yeah, but the pink one.
Oliver says, old Ruinous Path or new Ruinous Path? I always think new as it's always... I think new as it's two cards versus the rare time you awakened Ruinous Path.
Yeah. I mean, Ruinous Path still. I think Awaken is, like, pretty insane, actually. I mean, the format has to be right for it, but the format has to be right for this one, too. Like, Ruinous Path is not a playable magic card right now.
Yeah. I think Ruinous Path never got its time in the sun because, like, they never let it. But I actually think the card probably would have been good as, like, a 2-of or something like that. But never.
It's occasionally been good, right?
Yeah.
It's been fine.
Yeah, it's been a 3-of in some decks before. Never Return, however. Why can't this card just be an instant?
What does it kill? Is it a creature or a planeswalker?
Yeah. I just don't understand.
It should just be Reprint Hero's Downfall. I don't think we need it to be a split card. Like, I don't think you want to print a strictly better Hero's Downfall. Like,
why?
Hero's Downfall is, because Hero's Downfall is very good. I don't think it needs it.
Alright.
Like, if it was just a Hero's Downfall reprint, I don't know.
I think Ruinous Path is better, but I could be wrong. That is it for the questions from the patrons. So thank you so much to our patrons for asking those questions. That was fun. It was like a bunch of little mini topics. I really enjoyed that. Don't forget that you can become a patron at patreon.com/ccmtg to support this content. Our next goal, we'll get cast tokens made. I'm being told that a goat token of Michael will be finished this week.
Sick.
So thank you so much, Mason. Thank you so much, Mason, for reminding me that I need to get wristbands ordered so that I can send those out. Where can people find you, Michael?
Wait, sorry, I'm actually, I don't know. I think I just made a sheep noise. I don't know what nose goes to make. It's distressing.
Don't they scream?
Well, I'm not going to scream, but I don't know what that's going to sound like through the mic. So I'm a little scared of that. But Oh, yeah. So you can find me on Facebook. Sorry, I'm still thinking about goats. You can find me on Facebook. My name is Michael Hindrocker. You can find me on Twitter at MagicMikeMTG.
You can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Hallen. You can find me on Twitter at Spencer13H. You can find the podcast every week on mtgcast.com, constructivecriticism.com, and now live on YouTube. I love this. This was really fun. I'm so glad that we did this.
It's kind of fun. I hope that people enjoy it and that it's something that they think it's worth.
I also like watching. That I have the power to mute Michael. That makes my day. You know, just stop talking, Michael.
So the problem is that you need a third host before that really works very well. Otherwise, it's just like the Spencer monologue show, which
already exists. You know. It's called Wednesday Hangboy.
It's hard to do for an hour. Like that would be a really long, long episode.
Yeah, I feel like I've had dreams that I've done it before.
That sounds like a stress dream,
dude. It is. It's like the. You have no idea how often I dream that my co-host quits. Like it's all the time. Anyway, you can join the conversation by joining the Facebook group. It's just called Constructive Criticism Family. If you're a patron of $5 or more per month, you actually get access to the Constructive Critics Facebook group. You can join the Discord channel. You know, shoot me a message and I'll shoot you a link. Just shoot me one on Facebook or Twitter and I'll get you that link. You can join the clan on MTGO by messaging me at Spencer13Dev or Quentin at Earthstripe. That's URTHSTYRPE. Did I do it?
I don't know
either. Hashtag would that be good? Hashtag would that be good is our Twitter outreach program where you can also join the conversation. And if you tweet it, we'll read it, as Michael likes me to say.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a great slogan. Like, it just sounds exciting when you say it like that.
Well, let's start with Leo, who says, want to get a better modern deck, so I sold a bunch of cons fetches and got some Modern Masters 2017 foil. Oh, sorry. He sold cons fetches and Modern Masters 2017 foils to get a single Noble Hierarch. I appreciate the dedication.
Yeah, I mean, the secret is that Modern Masters 17 foils don't count as foils.
Why is that?
Because the whole point of a premium card is that they're, like, not in every pack. When you just put them in every pack, it defeats the purpose.
I think that, like, making an effort to upgrade your deck is really important. A lot of people don't do that. They're just like, oh, it's too expensive. I'm never going to get it. But, like... honestly, when you upgrade your deck, it like cards count for wins, and you'll get your money back through booster packs and different winnings and stuff like that. I've always said that. So
the main thing too is like it allows you. So sort of deciding that you're going to build into this allows you to like potentially take advantage of trading opportunities that are available to you, or like a good price on a card. Where like if you never start going down this road, you just like. So someone has a Noble Hierarch they need to get rid of, and they'll, you know, take $50 for it or whatever. And you're like, oh, well, that would be a good price, but I don't have any. Right? Like, if we start moving towards something with a goal in mind, it allows you to take advantage of being able to trade for something or being able to get a good price on it.
Yeah. Panda Moomoo says, don't like playing MTG with my friends anymore since they are toxic players, but I love the game. Should I switch to MTGO? Hashtag, would that be good? First of all, I'm pretty sure that you are from Provo, Utah, from your Twitter, and I would recommend checking out Game Grid in Lehigh. You could probably make some friends out there that are pretty cool. One of our listeners, Paul Farnsworth, plays out there, as well as some other really cool guys. So I would recommend trying that out and trying to get into a group like that, because they're pretty cool guys out there.
I would just recommend trying to sit close to Danny Cathro one time, because he'll just talk to you and then you'll be friends.
But yes, MTGO is a good option. If you enjoy Magic enough to invest in MTGO, it really is a great option for getting better. And however, you're not going to get rid of toxic players by going to MTGO.
I think, yeah. Well, and the other thing is that Magic Online, like, I think it can be a little bit tough in some ways. Just like if you don't have any other ways to play and that's all you're playing, and you're not really sure like what kind of paper events you're looking to play, what your goals are, it can be a little bit tough, just to, because you're just like playing leagues to play leagues. But I do think that it is a really good tool. And it does let you play against better players.
Yeah, I use MTGO as a way to practice. I also play in PPTQs online sometimes, so I don't know. Huge fan of the pod. Weekly training rounds makes a huge difference in my life as I strive and grow to be a better player and person. That is my favorite tweet. I hope that whenever we have one of those deep training grounds, I do them because it's things that have helped me become a better person and a player. So I always hope that we're doing something that helps you. So. At CCMTG, if I attack with a 10-10 death shadow and then fling it post-combat, hashtag, would that be good? No.
It's team or battle rage for people who hate themselves.
Yeah, I was just going to say, can't you just battle rage then?
Well, I mean, maybe you want to kill a creature. Maybe their death shadow is looking imposing, and you need to, you know, now that you've hit them for 10, you need to fling your death shadow into their death shadow.
How low is your life total when your death shadow is a 10-10?
3.
Okay, that's what I thought.
You can just fling it at yourself because you already hit yourself. It's all good.
But I appreciate the question. Potting voice into Renegade Rattler, hashtag would it be good? At Spencer13H, at Britney Spears. Scotty, sure. you always do the best things. Where are we potting?
Legacy?
Yeah. I got really excited about this, and I was like, man, Renegade Rallyer does seem really good in pod. Why aren't we playing that? And I was like, wait, pod is banned.
Yeah, I mean, you can try. I'm ambivalent about playing a green-white deck in Legacy. We're missing the color that I really want in, you know, every deck I'm playing.
Sure.
There's a rule in Legacy. If you're not playing Brainstorm, you should be really, really sure you're not supposed to be playing Brainstorm instead.
I don't know, man. Gen Pod is really fun in Legacy. Family is raising chickens, and I have naming rights currently set on Kentucky Fried, Caesar Salad, and Tenders, and I don't know what that word is.
Marsala.
Okay. First of all, I have, in fact, owned animals that I sold to slaughter. I raised them specifically for that purpose. And I had a pig, and his name was Barf. B-A-R-F. Because why would I name my pig something special when I already know where he's going? So, yeah, if you so want
to... I was wondering if that was like, so then this is the dishes we're going to make them into?
Yeah, except I actually... I think they bought... I think that they... I think that they bought their chickens to like get the eggs. So,
that's disappointing.
Yeah, maybe I'm wrong, Matt. You let us know. But I do appreciate Kentucky Fried. Caesar salad. No, you can come up with something better than that.
No, if you're naming them be, and eating it, them, it name should, them all Marsala.
It should be Popeyes, Kentucky Fried Chicken, and whatever another fried chicken food chain is. All right, we have hashtag weather be good, and it's a picture of Nyssa, steward of elements. She's green, blue, X. She comes into play with X loyalty. She's a +2 of scry 2. She has a 0 that is worse than I thought it was after reading it 6 times. Of look at the top card of your library. If it's a land card or a creature card with a given amount of costs less than or equal to the number of loyalty counters on Nyssa, you may put that card onto the battlefield. A -6 that is untapped 2 target lands you control. They become 5/5 elemental creatures with flying and haste until end of turn. They are still lands. All right, so two things. When I first read this card, I thought that X was constant for the 0 ability.
That would be like a lot worse.
No, actually, that I think it would be better.
Really?
Yeah, because then it scales well, right? Whereas here, you can kind of adjust it. So it's better in a different way. I guess both can be good. It kind of depends on how you build your deck. The -6, I thought that those creatures were all... Those lands just were creatures now. And I was like, so wait a second. 8 mana, 10-10 flying. Like, yes, this Planeswalker is good.
Sure. I think it still might be good. I was talking about just... I was saying this to you earlier today, but I was talking about just like playing it on three, plussing and putting a land second from the top. And if you're able to like plus, scry one, draw a card for your turn, put a land into play, kill your opponent's creature, you're kind of doing it.
Sure.
That's like a pretty good spell at that point. I think this gal does scale fairly well.
Yeah. I could be wrong. I think she's bad.
She might not be great, but it's really hard to evaluate a planeswalker that costs whatever mana you have available. Like, that's not really something that we've had before, meaning it's literally not something that we've had before. So it's really hard to evaluate a planeswalker that plays very differently as like a 3-drop and a 7-drop.
You know, you could pay 2 and just discard her.
Yeah. Get Delirium.
2 mana. Yeah, she enables Delirium. That's great.
Yeah, it's easy. I mean, or you can cast her for 1 and then your opponent probably has to kill her eventually.
Our first live CCMTG is going live in 8 minutes at YouTube. And then the link. Come join us, MTG podcast. Would that be good? It was fun. So thank you. Mason tweeted at Kesha saying, watching the podcast on my TV, you should come along with us. Here's the link, Kesha. # would that be good? Oh, man.
Man, someone liked that tweet, too.
Who was it?
Happy Life Coach.
Oh. Happy Life Coach.
They know the secret. Yeah. I mean, it's good for you.
Michael, let's wrap this up. What did you learn this week?
Well, I learned a lot of things. Specifically, looking back through the questions. Specifically, that Spencer wanted to put Lotus Cobra in Amonkhet, and then, like, despite it being a really good flavor fit, realized it wouldn't actually be very good.
See, they could have done a lot of things, right? Fetchlands could have been an Amonkhet with Lotus Cobra. I'm just saying,
man. This just sounds like Modern Masters 2017 Redux.
I learned that Michael, doesn't believe in the truth that is Yellow Starburst is the worst. Well, actually, I didn't learn that. I think I already knew that.
Yeah, you did know that already.
Okay. Okay, I learned that if I press this button up here on my screen, it mutes Michael. So,
I mean, I just press hang up, it just ends the podcast. So.
That's not necessarily true, but thank you everybody for listening, and we'll see you guys all next week. Magic.